All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am breaking down Falcons first round pick, Calvin Ridley, with the one and only scouting report that you will ever need to look at the Falcons' top 2018 draft selection.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalconFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, the host of this podcast. You can find me on Twitter, at FalcFans, tweeting up a storm. And today, you're going to get my personal scouting report of Calvin Ridley. I think this is going to be your one-stop shop if you're going to listen or read or watch anything breaking down Calvin Ridley. Today is going to be the one thing that you have to look at and listen to, because I am going to be evaluating the player. You're not going to get hype. You're not going to get hope on this podcast. You're going to get a real player evaluation. And I think this is important because part of the problem that I constantly run into, and one of the reasons why I am the way that I am, is because I think so many people out there are giving you guys hype and hope and raising these expectations that if you guys would not have, you would not get the sort of backlash that you get with guys like a Vic Beasley, like a Austin Hooper, like any number of players that are Jake Matthews, for example, because people have these unrealistic expectations because they don't evaluate the player. All they hear is a player comparison. All they hear is about how great this player is going to be, and they don't really understand the very real obstacles that every player has that they need to overcome in their development to reach the potential ceiling that so many people are quick to throw out there. I'll give you an example. Before we get to the Calvin Ridley, I want to give you a concrete example of what I'm talking about. Take a player like Austin Hooper. Vic Beasley is another great example, but I'll skip him because we talk about Vic Beasley constantly on this podcast. But Austin Hooper is a great example of this, because if you really evaluated the player, the whole notion that Austin Hooper was going to have this breakout year in 2017 would have been pretty ridiculous, pretty outlandish. And the reason for that is that when you evaluate Austin Hooper as a player coming out of Stanford, you would have seen that the things that he is not a matchup tight end. What I mean by a matchup tight end, I mean a Gronk, a Kelce, a healthy Jordan Reed, a guy that is so talented that he creates mismatches. Linebackers are too slow. Safeties are too small. He creates that mismatch. He creates opportunities for other players because in the same way that Julio Jones creates mismatches, like, teams just can't deal with him and they have to adjust their coverages. Austin Hooper is never going to be that type of tight end. He is a good athlete, but he is not that level of athleticism. So the key to Austin Hooper's success in the NFL as a high-level tight end is going to hinge on two skills, route running and one that is less of a personal skill but a reality, which is his ability to build a rapport with Matt Ryan. Let's talk about the route running. Here's the thing. The reason why Austin Hooper having a breakout year in year two is ridiculous is because you're not going to be the refined route runner in your second NFL season that he would need to be in order to be that breakout candidate. It takes years of time and development. Look at Roddy White. Look at Julio Jones. Heck, look at Jason Witten and Tony Gonzalez. Those guys were all top-level athletes early in their career, so they were able to a certain extent get by with being unpolished and unrefined route runners early in their careers. Until they eventually, after 3, 4, 5, 6 years, they were able to refine their route running to get it to a level where no longer their athleticism is necessary. They don't need that high level athleticism to be a top end wide receiver or tight end. And the thing with Austin Hooper is that's going to take time. That's not going to be something that in his second year in the NFL, he's going to be this refined route running. That's going to take the better part of 4 or 5 or more years for him to get to a level where he can then create the separation that his natural athleticism is not going to allow him to have. Okay. The other thing is the rapport with Matt Ryan, because he's not going to be this guy that's going to basically just win and separate so easily, particularly early on in his career when he's developing as a route runner and he doesn't have that elite athleticism. The other thing is going to be his rapport with Matt Ryan, where Matt Ryan is going to have enough trust in him where it's like, if I put the ball in this spot, Austin Hooper is going to catch it. Right. And so that's one of those things that takes time to build. And especially when you have another bunch of quality receivers on your roster, like a Julio Jones, among others, it's not going to come by force. Like, you look at a player like Kyle Rudolph, who was a player that I compared Austin Hooper to when he came out of college. When you look at Kyle Rudolph's development in Minnesota, for the most part in Minnesota, he was their number two receiver, because for most of his career, Minnesota has not had this talented core of wide receivers. Whether it was Sidney Rice or Percy Harvin or Stephon Diggs, they've typically only had one good receiver, and so Kyle Rudolph was the de facto number two. And so that rapport with his quarterbacks kind of was forced because of the fact that he was their number two guy. But in Atlanta, Austin Hooper's the number three, the number four, the number five receiver oftentimes. And so that rapport is not going to be forced. So the only real reality, in my opinion, that Austin Hooper would have had a breakout season in 2017 would only have come if Falcons had suffered massive injuries at their wide receiver position to the point that now Austin Hooper becomes a de facto number two receiver in the offense because they don't have better options out there. And so when you evaluate the player that Austin Hooper was, the idea that he was going to have this massive breakout season, or even not only in 2017, but even kind of in 2018, there's no real reason to believe that Austin Hooper is going to be demonstrably better in 2018 than he was in 2017. I think he'll improve, but I don't think it's going to be like this huge leap forward for him because, again, year three, why is he going to be significantly more of that refined route runner and have that click, that mental psychic connection with Matt Ryan all of a sudden this year that he didn't have last year? Will he make improvements in those arenas? Absolutely. But if we're going to see a big leap forward in Austin Hooper, at least from a production standpoint, it's probably only going to come in the red zone where he's going to be, where the offensive coordinator is going to be able to scheme opportunities for him that he wasn't scheming last year. And so you might see Austin Hooper put up similar catch rate, similar yards, but you might see like six touchdowns instead of three this year, all of a sudden because the offensive coordinator was able to find more opportunities for him in certain situations. So I think that's the point I'm trying to make, is when you evaluate the player, you don't have these completely wrong and false assumptions and expectations about these players, so you're not going to fall into the trap of having this backlash against players because, oh, this guy didn't live up to the standards that I thought he was going to be. That's why people hate Jake Matthews, because he's not what they think a top 10 left tackle is. But when you look at the player that Jake Matthews was at Texas A&M, Jake Matthews is basically the best version of that type of player. When you look at Vic Beasley, people are like, oh, Vic Beasley's not this Von Miller type. But he never was that Von Miller type. But the version of player that Vic Beasley is he's close to the best version of that type of player that he can be. And so the question with Vic Beasley is, can he become more than that type of player? And if he does, then the sky is the limit with his potential. But if he doesn't, then you're just basically going to get a slightly better version of the player that he currently is. And so that's what I mean when we talk about evaluating a player. We're going to get to Calvin Ridley in a second. But that's what I mean where you have to evaluate the player and really understand what the player is, and you don't get into these unrealistic expectations where we throw around these comparisons for Calvin Ridley like a Marvin Harrison, and that there's reasons for that. We'll get to that later in the show. But there's reasons for that. But what it does is it creates this expectation that people think, oh, Calvin Ridley's going to be one of the premier wide receivers in the NFL and be this Hall of Fame caliber type of player because they hear the name Marvin Harrison and they don't really understand why someone makes that comparison. And you have to evaluate the player. And so that's what we're going to do today on today's show. I wanted to get that rant off my chest because I think far too often at this time of year, people go down these hype trains about these young players and get so enamored with, oh, the ceiling and whatnot, and don't really evaluate the player, so that these unrealistic expectations get set up for these guys that really does set these guys up to fail because people have these just ridiculous expectations on what these players are supposed to be. So I say all that as a preface to what we're going to talk about with Calvin Ridley in a second. But before we get to that, of course, I have to plug the Locked On NFL Draft podcast. They are reviewing all 32 teams' NFL drafts right there as part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, okay, let's talk with Calvin Ridley. And when we talk about Calvin Ridley, we got to talk about the strengths. And the number one strength that we have to talk about is his route running ability, the suddenness, the burst. That ability to throttle up, throttle down, in and out of his breaks really allows him to separate really well. Yes, he is probably the most polished route runner in the draft. I'm not going to dispute the fact that I didn't necessarily evaluate all the wide receivers to necessarily make that claim, but I will definitely not dispute that claim. That's what he is known for. That's what he really does well. And when we get into this Falcons offense in particular, when we have these quote unquote vanilla route concepts, which really require individual wide receivers to beat man coverage in these man beater concepts that we saw constantly in the Cutter offense, constantly in the Malarkey offense, and now so far in the Sarkisian offense, Ridley's going to thrive in those situations because he does have that ability to beat man coverage. The other strength of his game that is one of the reasons why he's so effective as a route runner is his speed, is his acceleration. And you see that with his ability to get vertical in the offense. He has 4.4 speed, but sometimes when you watch the film, you're like, this guy should have ran a sub 4.4 40 because he does have that ability to break away from players. You see that acceleration, particularly when he's trying to beat press coverage. A lot of the reasons we'll get into one of the weaknesses of his game, which is his ability against press. But one of the reasons he's able to overcome that quite a bit in college is he's so quick off the line that it makes it hard for cornerbacks to jam him. And so that's one of the things that we'll have to watch with his development to sort of see if that continues in the NFL or if some of the other issues that he has against press come up. But we'll get into that later on in the episode. But I do think that when he gets these one-on-one situations with a cornerback that doesn't have safety help, which will often be the case here in Atlanta, he has an opportunity to really make defenses pay with his ability to get vertical down the field, much more so than Mohamed Sanu and Justin Hardy, a la a Taylor Gabriel, a la an Aldrick Robinson. While I don't think he's quite as fast as those guys were, I do think he does definitely have that vertical speed to be able to get behind and get on top of a lot of NFL starting corners. With the acceleration ability, you also see that with his ability to win after the catch because he's comfortable with the ball in his hands. He's able to make quick bursts. You can use him on screens, and he can make big plays due to that speed and that acceleration to run away from defenders and whatnot. So I do think he'll be very effective in that arena as well with the ball in his hands. The hands are another strength of his game. He has good hands. He has good natural hands and ball skills and whatnot. Yes, he dropped passes in college. Yes, he dropped a number of passes in college. We talked about this on yesterday's episode with Matt Harmon, and I don't think the drops are that big an issue. I think some of it is due to the spotty accuracy of his quarterback, which makes him have to work a little bit too hard in order to make those catches. I think some of that is because he's not necessarily great in traffic. That's something that we'll talk about a little bit later. And so when cornerbacks are able to, you know, stick with him and be in his hip pocket and contest those throws, another thing that we talked about with Matt Harmon, he's going to have a tendency to drop more of those than, say, a guy that's a bigger, stronger guy. And again, we'll discuss that later. But even if those weren't issues and he still drops passes, like, again, I don't think that's a major glaring issue of concern. I have my reasons for that. I don't want to sit here and spend 10 minutes explaining those reasons, but that's maybe something that we can explore in the future. But I do think a lot of that has to do with eye-hand coordination. You know, the Cliff Notes version of that is, I think, my personal hot take is I don't think NFL teams do a great job coaching up eye-hand coordination. I think the jugs machine is a flawed way of doing that. I think there are other methods like juggling that would definitely improve that. That's a hot take. I haven't really put my theory into testing, so it's more of a hypothesis at this point. But that's one of the reasons why I don't really get too upset with guys that drop passes, because I feel like if I was in the position to coach those guys, I could at least at that aspect of the position of catching a receiver, improving that eye-hand coordination, I could coach those guys up. And I think if NFL teams can't do that, that's a failure of coaching, not necessarily an issue with the player. So the hands are a non-issue, and I think for the most part, he will certainly catch a lot more passes than he drops at the NFL level. I think the other thing that you like about Calvin Ridley is the competitiveness. I think that sort of that mental aspect of competitiveness makes him a really good fit in Atlanta with the Falcons wide receiver group on the same wavelength as Julio Jones and Sanu and Hardy and all those guys that are more quote-unquote those blue-collar wide receivers rather than the traditional diva guy. I think what I would label Ridley as is he's competitive, although he's not very physical. And what I mean by that is he doesn't back away from challenges in the way you see that with his interaction with DBs and whatnot on the field, but he's not a physical guy. And what the contrast I would use is like when Julio Jones' competitiveness comes out, he becomes a very physical player. When you watched him at Alabama, when they would play LSU and he would be going up against Patrick Peterson, he would be basically, you could see it on the field where he would be like, I'm going to dominate you and I'm going to go after you and I'm going to physically dominate you to make you know that I am a better player than you. And some of Julio Jones's best performances in his college career came against LSU because of that competitiveness, which would turn into physicality and become that dominant sort of player. Ridley doesn't have that. He doesn't have that physical element to his game. And so what he's going to do when he gets in those competitive situations is I'm not going to physically dominate you. I'm just going to run circles around you and I'm going to make you eat my dust. And I think that's going to be one of those things that when he faces these upper tier wide receivers, you're going to see that competitiveness and him try to rise to the challenge and do all the things that make him, you know, more of a quote unquote finesse receiver. But again, if he's creating, you know, 3 yards of separation, I'll take a finesse receiver all day if he's going to be wide open on the field. You know what I'm saying? So I think those are really the core strengths of Ridley. I think all the other strengths of his game are sort of offshoots of those things. And I think that's all the things that he's going to do really well. And I think those are the things that are going to allow him to be a very successful NFL receiver because of his ability to separate. You know, I think the number one skill that you need to be a high level receiver in the NFL is the ability to separate from coverage. That's what Ridley's greatest strength is. And so there's every reason to believe that he's going to be a high level receiver in the NFL. All right, we got more to talk about Calvin Ridley with his weaknesses and some of the question marks surrounding his game. But first, maybe you want to take advantage of the growth of Bitcoin and diversify your portfolio towards a new innovative investment, but the world of cryptocurrency is confusing and you don't know how to get involved. That's where BitTrust IRA comes in to help you seamlessly and securely add cryptocurrency to your portfolio. Their team handles the entire process to make it easy. Download your free copy of their cryptocurrency IRA investor's guide at bittrustira.com/podcast. That's bittrustira.com/podcast. Or you can give them a call right now to learn more at 855-642-8800. That's 855-642-8800. Now, let's get into Ridley's weaknesses. Now, the combine testing to me is not that big a deal. I do think his play does reflect that he's not a great leaper or jumper. So the broad jump, the vertical jump, yeah, you do sort of see that on the field. The short shuttles, that was a little baffling. I'm just going to assume that he bombed it. Like, it's hard to have as good a three cone as he had and as bad a short shuttle that he had without sort of like messing it up and without seeing sort of video of his short shuttle. That's what I'm going to assume there. So I'm not overly concerned about the combine testing, but I do think it sort of manifests itself with that ability to win those 50-50 balls. So I do think he's more of a Taylor Gabriel in that way than a Sanu or a Julio Jones when you throw the ball up and he's going to go up and get it. I don't think that's really going to be the strength of his game. You do see him being able to high point balls. I think he does have those ball skills again, but I don't think it's necessarily he's going to be like if he faces a 6 foot cornerback, I don't think those are going to be situations that are going to be advantageous for him to win. The main issue with Ridley is going to be play strength. And I think most of his issues are generated off of questionable play strength. You know, he's a 189-pound receiver, but he kind of plays like a 180-pound receiver. It's one of the reasons why I compared him to Harry Douglas, because Harry Douglas was 176 pounds when he came into the NFL. I think bulked up to like 182 or something. 185 probably by the time he was there. But, you know, Harry Douglas had issues. A lot of his issues dealt with play strength and winning in traffic. I think the main thing that Ridley's going to have to deal with is his ability to beat press. I don't necessarily know if Ridley's going to be able to bulk up to the degree that I think he needs to, even though he'll have an NFL strength and conditioning situation, because we've seen this with guys like Vic Beasley and Deion Jones. Like Deion Jones, you know, hardly ever basically was is a 220, and basically every offseason has to put on 10 pounds in order to get to his playing weight. And you see that kind of with Vic Beasley. So I don't necessarily, I'm not confident that Atlanta's necessarily the place based off of that evidence where he's going to be a guy that's going to, you know, get ripped and all that sort of thing that he needs to really get that play strength to a level where it's great. And so you see that play strength reflected in his ability to beat press. As I mentioned before, because of his quickness, because of his acceleration, he's able to sort of outquick guys when they play press and make the guy miss the jam at times. And I think that's going to be really what he relies on in the NFL. And so he can refine that a little bit. But you do see instances when cornerbacks in college are able to basically get a hand on him, it does often stop him dead in his tracks. And that's a reflection of that play strength. And I do certainly think it's fair to say that the quality of jamming that he will receive in the NFL from guys like Xavier Rhodes, from guys like Josh Norman, Aqib Talib, etc., is going to be much higher than he faced in the SEC. No offense to the SEC, but I think those guys would absolutely dominate that conference as is if they were playing there. So I do think that's going to be a potential issue. And I think where that is reflected, I do think that has an effect on where his ceiling is as a player, because you see guys like Nelson Aguilar, you see guys like Brandon Cooks, who are not particularly good against the press, even though they're high-level NFL wide receivers, but it does limit how good they are at, in the upper echelon. But we'll get into sort of the discussion of his ceiling later. I think the good thing that really has to deal with is going against guys like Trufant and Alford in practice, particularly a guy like Alford. I think it will help him because Alford is really good at jamming guys, or Alford likes to jam guys. And so I think that will help really get better at that. But again, I don't necessarily know if we're ever going to see him being able to go toe to toe with an Aqib Talib type of cornerback and be like, oh yeah, that guy's not going to be, because you even see it with Julio Jones, and play strength is not an issue with Julio Jones. Acceleration and burst is not an issue with Julio Jones. But the cornerbacks that give Julio Jones the most trouble are the guys that can get up in his face and press him and prevent him from getting those free releases. So I do think that's going to be an issue for Ridley at the next level. And you do wonder a little bit if that's going to relegate him more to the slot than you see with a Julio Jones, who's a guy that, you know, can sort of live in anywhere on the field. And you do wonder if Ridley's going to be more of that Aguilar type that's going to have to basically spend most of his time in the slot to avoid that press sort of coverage. I think the play strength issues also factor in, as I mentioned before, with his ability to win in traffic. Again, I do think he's good at high pointing throws when he has room to do so. But I do think it is a question a little bit whether or not he's going to be the sort of ideal receiver that's going to win on those tight window throws, because he can get out muscled in the air and at the catch point. So that is going to be a concern. He's not a guy that's going to break tackles. He's very good after the catch, but it's not because he's going to break tackles. He's going to go down off of first contact pretty consistently because of that play strength. He's not a great blocker either. And, you know, he's competitive. Again, he tries, but he's not necessarily a guy that's going to hold the point of attack and sustain those blocks. So again, most of his issues are dealing with the fact that he's an undersized wide receiver and more of a quote-unquote finesse guy. The one area of concern that I legitimately have about where Ridley's development goes that may or may not be related to this issue is durability. And I don't have a real reason other than just sort of suspicions whether or not him being a little bit undersized is going to be a factor. But given how so many of these recent wide receivers, and one of the reasons why so many early round wide receivers haven't quite lived up to their hype so far in the NFL in recent years, like a Corey Coleman, like a Kevin White, Breshad Perriman, Sammy Watkins, Paul Richardson, Marquise Lee, Kelvin Benjamin, all of these guys have dealt with injuries to a certain extent early in their careers or during the middle portions of their careers that have somewhat derailed their seasons. And I do wonder if a guy like Ridley is going to be a little bit more susceptible to injuries just because of how slight a build he has. And I do wonder about that. The good thing you will say about Ridley is that he never missed a game. He had suffered a couple of nicks over the last couple of years, but he never missed a game in college at Alabama. So again, that speaks to the competitiveness. But then again, Julio Jones only missed one game and despite all his nicks that he suffered in college, and we've sort of seen how injury prone he has been in his NFL career, even when the seasons like last year or 2015 where he doesn't miss a game, you do see so in several games sort of dealing with injuries, and you see him not as effective where he's not playing at 85%, let alone 100%. So that is a concern for me. But I think those are really the only issues with him. And so that's what I mean when you evaluate the player. You have to sort of look at that one glaring issue, that play strength, and all the issues that stem from it, and say, maybe that's going to limit how high his ceiling is. I think when you look at his ceiling, one of the reasons why myself and others compare him to Marvin Harrison, because I think the best version of the player that he could be, which is this undersized wide receiver, but is a superb route runner, is what Marvin Harrison was. Marvin Harrison was like 175 pounds, you know, 5'11", 175 pounds, was one of the elite route runners in the league. So it overcame the fact that he was not this sort of physical specimen. Throw in the fact that he had Peyton Manning and really built that rapport and that timing and that offense to get the most out of him in Indianapolis, and you had a Hall of Fame career. I think the best version of what Ridley can potentially be is what Marvin Harrison was in Indianapolis. I'm not going to sit here and say that that's what he's going to be, but it, you know, like it wouldn't necessarily come out of left field that happened. I don't know if the conditions are the same where Matt Ryan's going to be on that level, if Ridley and Ryan are going to have that ability to build that rapport like a Peyton Manning and Harrison did from the very beginning of Peyton Manning's career, now that Matt Ryan's towards the end of his career. And I don't necessarily know if Raheem Morris is really the coach at this point to say that he's going to be this super, super duper route runner and develop into that. No offense to Raheem Morris, but I don't think there's any real reason at this point to think that that's likely. Not to say that it's completely not going to happen, but it's just kind of like, do we know that Raheem Morris is that type of coach that's going to get, like, you could make an argument that Terry Rubisky was that given his history and his success of developing wide receivers in the NFL, but I don't necessarily know if you can go so far to say that Raheem Morris is that type of guy. Now, over the next five seasons, maybe that bears out in his development of Ridley, and so he would certainly build that sort of reputation. But at this point, I can't necessarily be overly optimistic that Ridley is going to be that type of Marvin Harrison type of player. So I do think when you look at his ceiling, I do think the inability to beat press, I do think that does put a little bit of a cap on his ceiling as a wide receiver, and he's not going to necessarily be in that echelon like a Marvin Harrison, like a Julio Jones, like an AJ Green, and that upper echelon of wide receivers where he's in the conversation for the best wide receiver in the biz. But I do think his ceiling does certainly is maybe a tier or so below where that Michael Thomas, that T.Y. Hilton sort of tier, where it's clearly a guy that's one of the better wide receivers in the league, clearly a guy that almost every 10 NFL team would love to have on the roster, clearly a guy that would be the number one guy on probably 60 to 75% of the NFL teams in the league, and clearly a dangerous guy and a dynamic guy that can be the sort of lead dog in your passing game. I think Ridley's ceiling is more likely, more realistically going to be in that area as opposed to in that Julio Jones, Marvin Harrison area. So that's what I mean when you're talking about evaluating the player. When you say like, okay, he compares to Marvin Harrison, but I think he's more of a like a middle class man's Marvin Harrison, I would say. So I think ultimately his long-term floor is going to be a guy like an Aguilar, more like a 2017 Aguilar, not necessarily 2015 Aguilar. And I think sort of what his first year floor is going to be more like what Taylor Gabriel was supposed to be, which is a guy that, you know, can catch 30 to 40 passes a year, get you 500-ish yards and get you a couple of touchdowns. I think that's where sort of Ridley's floor is for this season. And I think the sky, you know, I won't say the sky is the limit, but the potential beyond that, he certainly, I think, can reach that. But I think if we're having sort of what our lower expectations are for him, or what our baseline expectations are for him, not our low expectations, but our baseline expectations are sort of basically Taylor Gabriel, a better version of what Taylor Gabriel was last year, because he's going to be able to run more routes than Taylor Gabriel was last year, which for some reason the Falcons tore out that page in the playbook and decided to basically scrap the dig routes and all those sorts of the comebacks that Taylor Gabriel was so good at running in 2016, and just, you know, wanted to run jet sweeps and screens. And then when they dialed up the deep post, Matt Ryan missed all of those throws. So it just seemed like the worst possible version for Taylor Gabriel. I don't think that's going to be the case with Calvin Ridley, because, again, I think he can run that full route tree, unlike a Mohamed Sanu, and be very effective doing so. So I think when we evaluate the player and we talk about sort of his potential to be a Marvin Harrison type of player, I do think people can't go too crazy with that. I think eventually Ridley's going to be the number two next season, because I think, you know, one of the things that I, you know, in my Mohamed Sanu's hatred, believe is that when Ridley gets that opportunity to be that number two as early as next year, you're going to see like a night and day difference between what Ridley can bring as that number two versus what Sanu currently brings as that number two. So it sort of, you know, makes me go like, yeah, all those people that think Mohamed Sanu is a upper echelon or quality number two wide receiver, I think are going to be looking pretty silly 12 months from now or 18 months from now. So, yeah, I think that's really sort of where Ridley's going to develop. And to me, the question is going to be, is he going to be able to overcome those issues that I talked about, the play strength? Is he going to be healthy enough to be able to get the most out of what he is? And those are the real questions to me. And again, when you evaluate the player, I think those are legitimate questions. And I don't think when we get into this sort of hype train about, oh, he can be this and that and that, I think people need to pump the brakes a little bit. Can he get there? Absolutely. He certainly is a very talented wide receiver, and I do think he has the potential to be there. But I do think people need to take a deep breath and just be like, okay, we'll see what he becomes. And if 5 years from now he's not quite that player, if he's more Brandon Cooks, he's more, you know, T.Y. Hilton, he's more Nelson Aguilar, I think people will have a legitimate understanding of that, and certainly if you listen to this podcast, and be like, okay, this is what he was, and he may not have become the best version of what that is. And if he does become more than that, and more as a Marvin Harrison type of player, then absolutely, you know, then we can certainly celebrate that. But I don't necessarily think we should be going into it expecting him to basically be, you know, this elite NFL wide receiver, when there are some issues to his game that suggest that he will be a very good wide receiver, but not necessarily the elite guy. So that's my Calvin Ridley scouting report. I do think, you know, he's going to be good in Atlanta. If it sounds like I'm being skeptical, it is just probably more as a reaction to some of the stuff that you're going to hear over the next, or you've heard over the last week or so since we'd selected him, as well as some of the issues I think you're going to hear over the next several weeks as he gets into mini camp and probably makes a couple of, you know, big splash plays that get people excited. And I just think that hype train is going to get, you know, is going to be a runaway train. And I do want to get people to understand that if you evaluate the player, it's not to say that Ridley won't be a very, very good NFL wide receiver, but if you evaluate the player, you know exactly what type of NFL wide receiver. So if he doesn't quite hit the ceiling that everybody, that hype train is going to push him to be, you'll understand exactly why that is, because there are certain aspects of his game that do need to be improved upon or at least overcome. And I do think his strengths certainly overshadow those weaknesses, because as I said, Brandon Cooks, T.Y. Hilton aren't necessarily guys that you would be like, oh, those guys are great against press coverage. Nelson Aguilar, another example of that. Like, but those guys have proven that they can be very effective NFL wide receivers despite that issue. And so I do think Ridley is going to be, assuming he can stay healthy, is going to be a very effective NFL wide receiver. So I don't want to sound like I'm down on him, but it is one of those things where he may not be that Roddy White, that Julio Jones type of wide receiver that's widely considered to be a top five, top 10 guy because of that issue that he's going to have to overcome with the play strength and all the issues that stem from that. So that's it, guys. I do want to do a Isaiah Oliver scouting report similar to this next week. I certainly want to finish up my tape watching of him this weekend. I don't know if we're going to have another guest. I'm still trying to line up all the guests that we're going to have to do these breakdowns. So I don't know if we're going to have a guest before we do that. But eventually we will get other people's opinions on every one of these draft picks We're probably going to do like one of these a week so that at least you can have something if in case the scheduling doesn't allow me to have guests to come on and talk about these players over the next 6 weeks or next 5 weeks at this point. So that's really going to be the plan. So I'm going to try to get at least one of these scouting reports every single week for each one of these players after watching several games for them. So that's the plan right now. If you guys have additional feedback that you want to give me, you can, of course, do so on Twitter at FalFans. That's my Twitter handle. If it's podcast related, just let me know with a tweet. If it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Of course, you can check me out on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. That's the Facebook page. Give us a like while you're there. Email address is lockedonfalcons@mail.com, as well as you can leave a comment on lockedonfalcons.com or falfans.com, where the show is hosted and posted daily. So that's it, guys. I hope you guys appreciate this in sort of these in-depth scouting reports. We're going to try to do it for all of our guys. It's not to sit here and be like, you know, I'm right and everybody else is wrong, but it is one of those things where I do think a lot of people just, you know, get too caught up in the hype with some of these players and don't really evaluate them. And it winds up setting you guys out there who are the content consumers as opposed to people like myself that are the content creators. And it sets out you consumers to have these unrealistic expectations because you hear five people talking about how amazing this player is. And then you hear little old me saying like, oh, he's not that good, or he's not as good as those people are saying. And then you're just like, oh, Aaron, stop being a negative Nancy. You know, you're just always a pessimist, you know, stop, you know, peeing in the punch bowl and whatnot. So, and so it tends to get drowned out. And then all of a sudden we fast forward 6 months later during the season. And it's like, why isn't Calvin Ridley getting 100 yards every single week? And why is he only catching like three passes for 35 yards every single week? Well, what's going on? And like, you know, if you evaluate the player, it's like, oh, those things are at least not to say predictable, because who knows what's going to happen during the season. But it's one of those things like, oh, I get it. I understand why. It makes perfect sense to me because these are the issues that he has to go through. And so I think that's what we need to have more conversations that are real conversations about evaluating players, as opposed to just let's just get hyped and let's start talking about how amazing everything's going to work out and how all the ducks are going to line up in a row. And just like, you guys have been fans long enough. You guys are smart enough. I know I'm preaching to the choir a little bit when I talk to you guys, because I know if you listen to this podcast, you're one of the smartest fans, Falcon fans out there, because, you know, not to say that everything I say on this podcast is right or whatever, but I certainly say a lot of things on here that make you challenge your assumptions and whatnot and make you think a little bit deeper than you would if you just went to whatever place and just heard someone talk about how amazing, you know, the Falcons are. And so I'm preaching to the choir a little bit with that, but I do think you guys, you know, deserve to have these, you know, these thoughts and whatnot. So, okay, I'm done talking. I'm done rambling at this point, and we'll talk more about Isaiah Oliver next week, and we'll have more Falcons content on the Locked On Podcast until Locked On Falcons podcast. I probably know the name of the podcast, right? But until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.